The afternoon dragged slowly on towards evening as Adamant led his party through the bustling streets of the High Steps, making speeches, addressing gatherings, and generally beating the drum for reform. The crowds were thicker than ever as even those who'd been working spilled out onto the streets to make the most of the unofficial holiday. Street traders sold out their wares, closed their stalls, and joined the celebrations. Conjurers and mummers provided traditional entertainments. Innkeepers ran low on stock and began hauling dusty bottles from off the back shelves, and fireworks splattered the darkening sky. Adamant finally took a break from the crowds, who were more interested in partying than politics, and led his people into the more upmarket sections of the steps. He was looking for personal endorsements and promises of funds. What he got were kind words, good wishes, and vague promises. When anybody could be bothered to speak to him, Adamant declined to be disheartened and pressed on with unfailing enthusiasm. And along the way, two new members joined his party and walked along with him, Lawrence Bearclaw and Joshua Kincaid. Bearclaw was a big man in his late 40s, with broad shoulders and a barreled chest that was slipping slowly towards his belt. He first won fame by killing a bear with nothing but a knife, and he still wore the animal's claws on a chain around his neck to prove it. His shoulder-length hair was still jet black, because he dyed it regularly. He served in 100 different campaigns as a freelance mercenary, and he'd come away with credit and scalps from all of them. He didn't really care one way or another about reform, but he liked Adamant, and the idea of supporting the underdog appealed to him. Kincaid was an average height man in his mid-40s, with a shock of butter-yellow hair and icy blue eyes. He was muscular in a lean kind of way, didn't smile much, and was even more dangerous than he looked. He'd made his reputation by fighting in the infamous Bloody Ridges campaign alongside the legendary Adam Stalker. He was famous throughout Haven and moderately well-known outside it. There were several broadsheets and songs telling of his heroic deeds, all of them written by Kincaid under an assumed name. Like his friend and sometime fighting companion Bearclaw, Kincaid wasn't what you'd call political. But it had been too long since his last campaign, and he was bored sitting around waiting for a call to action that never came. He hated just sitting around. It made him feel old. If nothing else, working with Adamant was bound to supply enough material for a new broadsheet. The afternoon wore on and took its toll on all of them. Adamant seemed as full of bounce and vinegar as ever, but some of his party were beginning to wilt under the strain. Danielle in particular seemed to be having an increasingly hard time keeping up with him. She'd disappear now and again for a quick sit-down and a rest, and return later revitalized and full of energy. But it never lasted. Dark bruises began to appear under her eyes. Medley became increasingly distracted as he tried to keep up with the growing number of reports on how the campaign was going. Hawk and Fisher stayed close by Adamant and kept their eyes open for trouble. As guards, they were used to spending long hours on their feet, but the pace was getting to them, too. Things nearly came to a head when Adamant visited the few members of the Quality who lived on the edges of the steps in a last-ditch gamble for funding and support. Mostly, they got the door slammed in their faces. The rest of the time, they were invited in, only to be subtly sneered at or not so subtly threatened. This did not go down well with Fisher. She tended to take it personally when she got looked down on. In fact, she tended to get very annoyed and hit people. After one unfortunate incident, Adamant decided it would be better if she waited outside thereafter. But finally, even Adamant had to admit they'd done all they could. The evening was falling, and the voting would soon begin. He looked out over the milling crowds for a long moment, his eyes far away, and then he smiled and shook his head and took his people home. Back in Adamant's study, Hawk and Fisher sank immediately into the nearest chairs, put their feet up on his desk, and watched with interest as Adamant bustled around checking reports and planning future strategy.
When the first results start coming, I
Medley did his best to listen and pay attention, but he was beginning to look decidedly wilted around the edges. Danielle had already disappeared upstairs for a little lie down. Hawk, for one, didn't blame her. He could quite happily have spent the next few months just sitting in this chair doing nothing. He smiled slightly. He'd always suspected he was officer material. Bearclaw and Kincaid went in search of the kitchens to do a little restorative foraging. The butler Villiers came and went, bearing messages and reports for Adamant, with a haughty expression that suggested he considered himself above such things. Hawk and Fisher helped themselves to the wine. Medley finally shuffled the reports into some kind of order, and Adamant settled down behind his desk to listen. He glared at Hawk and Fisher until they took their boots off his desk, and then looked expectantly at Medley.
First, the good news. The Brotherhood of Steel is out on the street in force. Together with our people, they're knocking the hell out of Hardcastle's mercenaries. Also, street crimes have dropped 60%. Megan O'Brien, the spice trader, has pulled out of the election. He's given his money and support to Hardcastle in return for future favors. No surprises there. Lord Arthur Sinclair, standing on the No Tax on Liquor platform, was last seen passed out cold in the middle of a riotous party that covered an entire block. The guard have roped off the area and set up barricades. Anyway, Sinclair's officially out of the running, or will be as soon as anyone can wake him up long enough to tell him. The mystery candidate, known as Grey Vale, has disappeared, and no one's seen hide nor hair of him since midday. He's probably retired quietly to save face. Now we come to the bad news. Hardcastle has been campaigning just as hard as we have, if not more so. His speeches have all gone down very well, and his people are handing out booze and money like they're going out of fashion. He's made the rounds of some very influential people and gained a lot of support. The quality may not like him much, but they're scared to death of James Adamant. It also appears that Hardcastle has picked up some very powerful support from something on the Street of Gods. Mortis isn't sure who or what is behind it, but just recently, Hardcastle sorcerer Wolf has been using all kinds of powerful magic he didn't have access to before. He's still not strong enough to break through Mortis's wards, but Mortis can't break through Wolf's either. So as far as magic goes, we have a stalemate for the moment. The rest of the bad news concerns General Longarm.
Medley paused for a moment to gulp thirstily at a glass of wine before continuing.
Longarm and his militants are doing surprisingly well. There's no doubt his armed supporters have been practicing subtle and not-so-subtle intimidation, but there does seem to be some real grassroots support for Longarm. People are responding well to his theme of political strength through military strength. He's also sworn to accept any man with a sword into the militant branch of the Brotherhood once he's elected. A lot of people want that. Being a Brother of Steel opens a lot of doors, and not just in Haven.
Medley checked his papers to make sure he'd covered everything, and then dropped them on the desk before Adamant, who frowned thoughtfully.
What do we know about General Longarm, Stefan?
Solid, professional soldier, not very imaginative. He had a reasonably good record with the Low Kingdom's army before he retired and moved here. Came to politics late in life, which is probably why he takes it so seriously. Speaks well in public, as long as he sticks to a prepared text. This offer of guaranteed entry into the militant Brotherhood sounds a lot like desperation tactics. Might be worth sounding out other militants to find out whether it's a genuine offer or just something Longarm came up with off his own bat.
Adamant looked at Hawk and Fisher.
The militants already have one seat on the council, the Downs. Have you heard anything about that district since the militants took over?
It's not really our district, but I have heard a few things. Ever since Councillor Weaver came to power in the Downs, street crime has dropped by more than half throughout the area. That's been very popular. On the other hand, it seems clear that militant brothers have been working as unofficial guards in the Downs, and that hasn't been at all popular. There's no doubt they've been cracking down on street violence, but they've also been pushing their beliefs very strongly. And anyone who dares speak out against that gets very short shrift. I'm not just talking about bloody noses, either. Apparently the militants can turn quite nasty if they're crossed. I haven't any hard figures on how the election's going there, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Weaver lost his seat.
Thank you, Captain. There may be something there I can use. Campaign rhetoric is always better for having some basis in truth.
The door flew open and Danielle swept in, looking much refreshed. She smiled brightly at Hawk and Fisher, still slumped in their chairs.
What's this? Still tired? I don't know what the guard's coming to these days. James, darling, will you please come with me and talk to the cook? I've been trying to get her to agree to the menu we decided on for tonight's banquet, but she keeps going all mulish on me.
Of course, Danny.
Adamant nodded to Medley and the two guards and allowed his wife to drag him out from behind his desk and out into the hall. Hawk looked at Fisher.
I don't know where she gets her energy, but I could sure use some of it.
Hardcastle and his people trudged determinedly around the high steps, making speeches, shaking hands, and generally waving the flag.
The crowds had been drinking most of the day and were starting to get a little rowdy, but Roxanne and the mercenaries kept them in line, and the speeches were still going down very well. As long as Hardcastle kept talking, the crowds would listen, rapt and enthusiastic. Hardcastle was glad something was still going right. The news from the rest of the steps was almost universally bad. Somehow, Adamant had put together an army of fighting men and turned them loose, and they were wiping the streets with Hardcastle's mercenaries. He'd lost nearly every advantage he'd gained, and areas that should have been safely under his thumb were now singing reform songs and throwing stones at his people. Hardcastle fought to hold on to his temper. He couldn't afford to let himself be distracted. He still had to make the rounds and talk to the people who mattered. People of standing and influence. Adamant might crawl to the commoners for their grubby little votes, but it was the quality and the merchant houses who really ran Haven. That was where the real power lay. When they spoke, people listened, if they knew what was good for them. So Hardcastle went from house to house, knocking on doors and glaring at servants, only to find himself fobbed off with vague promises and excuses as often as not. Apparently, they were disturbed by the rising violence in the streets. Hardcastle fumed quietly to himself. These were the same people who'd bleated the loudest to the council that the advances reform had been making. The afternoon darkened toward evening, and Hardcastle headed for the last address on the list, his last friend and his last hope. He stood before Tobias's door and waited impatiently for an answer to the bell pull. It was taking a long time. Roxanne idly trimmed a fingernail with a nasty-looking dagger, and Wolf stared off into the distance, lost in his dreams of power. Hardcastle looked at his followers and mercenaries standing clumped together, and he gestured irritably for them to disperse across the street. He wouldn't put it past Adamant to launch a sneak attack if he thought he could get away with it. It was what Hardcastle would have done. Besides, he didn't need an army to visit a friend, assuming the friend would talk to him. Jeffrey Tobias had a reputation for being tight with money, and his house reflected it. Tobias was one of the six richest men in Haven, but his house was a cheap and nasty two-up, two-down in one of the more subdued areas of the steps. The walls hadn't been painted in years, wooden shutters covered the windows, locked tight even though it was still light. Tobias believed there were always thieves and cutthroats waiting for a chance at his money.
The man's probably right to keep his shutters and doors locked. A miser living on his own and apparently unprotected is an attractive target.
Not that Tobias was unprotected, of course. Hardcastle had no doubt the nasty little house was absolutely crawling with defensive spells. Tobias had always been careful with money, but since he lost his seat on the council, he turned all his attention to his financial dealings. A once leading firebrand of the conservative cause became a bitter and secretive recluse. He wouldn't see anyone he didn't absolutely have to, and even then only by appointment. But he'd see Hardcastle. Hardcastle was a friend, and more importantly, he had something Tobias wanted. The offer of a seat on the council. In return for a sizable contribution to Hardcastle's campaign funds, of course. The door opened a crack, and Tobias glared out at them. He recognized Hardcastle with a scowl and opened the door a little wider. He was a gray, shabby man with pale skin and stringy gray hair that hung listlessly around his shoulders. His clothes were filthy and years out of style, and you had to look hard to see that under the dirt and wrinkles they had once been of exquisite style and cut. His face was all sharp planes and angles, with a downturned mouth, and his eyes were cold and knowing. Tobias looked at Hardcastle for a long time.
Hello, Cameron. I should have known you'd come scratching at my door with the election so close. Are all these people with you?
Yes, Jeffrey. I vouch for them.
They stay out here, all of them. I won't have them in my house.
He stepped back to allow Hardcastle to enter. The narrow hall was gloomy and oppressive and smelled of damp. There was cracked plaster on the walls, and the floor was nothing but bare boards. Tobias led Hardcastle down to the end of the hall, pushed open a door, and gestured for him to enter. He did so, and found himself in a comfortable, brightly lit room. The walls were covered with highly polished wood panels, and there was a deep pile carpet on the floor. A huge padded armchair stood by the fireplace, next to a delicate wooden table covered with papers, and set with an elegant silver tea service. Tobias enjoyed Hardcastle's surprise.
I may be eccentric, Cameron, but I'm not crazy. I haven't much use for show or vanity anymore, but I still like my comforts.
He sank carefully into the armchair and gestured for Hardcastle to pull up the only other chair opposite him. They sat looking at each other for a moment.
Been a while, Geoffrey.
2 years at least. I've kept busy with one thing and another.
So I hear. They tell me you've doubled your fortune since you left the council.
Left? I didn't leave anything, and you damn well know it. I was forced out of my seat by that little snot Blackstone and his whining reformers. He promised the earth and the moon, and they believed him. Little good it did them. That precious Blackstone is dead, and his successor couldn't make money if his life depended on it. Just wait till the Heights is hurting for money and can't balance his budget and see how fast they scream for me to come back and save them!
You should take better care of yourself. You've let yourself go.
That's one way of putting it, I suppose.
Flecks of blood showed around Tobias's mouth. He patted his lips with a folded handkerchief, looked indifferently at the crimson stains on the cloth, and put it away.
What do you want here, Cameron? I've no influence anymore.
That could change. With a little persuasion, I think I can get you official conservative backing in the next election for the Heights. Full support right across the board. Of course, a large contribution to conservative funds would help to sway things in the future. That's how the world works.
Oh, I know all about how the world works, Cameron. Sorry to disappoint you, but I don't really care about the Heights anymore. I still get mad about how they treated me, but I wouldn't go back if they got down on their knees and begged. Being a counselor always meant more to my poor Maria than it ever did to me. I still miss her, you know.
Hardcastle looked nonplussed for a moment.
Not used to being caught out, are you, Cameron? You've been surrounded by advisors for too long. You can't trust advisors. They just tell you what they think you want to hear.
I need them. I can't do everything myself. And my friends haven't always been there when I needed them.
You never needed me. You never really needed anyone. And I had my own problems.
Why didn't you tell me you were ill? I would have come to you long before this.
I go my own way, Cameron. Always have, always will. I don't lean on anyone. Don't worry. You can have your contribution. Tell my lawyers how much you need and I'll see it gets to you. Buy some more mercenaries. By whatever it takes to crush those reform scum into the dirt. Make them pay for what they did to me.
I'll do that, Geoffrey. I promise you. Is there anything else I can do for you?
Yes. Leave me in peace. Goodbye, Cameron. Don't slam the door on your way out.
In Brimstone Hall, Gillian Hardcastle sat on her bed, her back pressed against the headboard, hugging her knees to her. Her husband had finally returned. She could hear him moving about downstairs, talking to people. His people. None of them were hers. Gillian had no friends. No one came to visit her, and she wasn't even allowed a servant of her own. All she had was her husband, the great Cameron Hardcastle. She looked at her bare arms, and the bruises stood out plainly even under the extra layer of makeup. She'd have to put on some long gloves before she went downstairs. Her back still ached, but it was bearable now. At least there hadn't been any blood in her urine this time. She often thought about leaving, but she had no one to go to. And wherever she went, Cameron would be sure to find her. He had people everywhere. She sometimes thought about killing herself, but she could never find the courage. Hardcastle had beaten all the courage out of her. At the sound of footsteps, fear rushed through Gillian like icy water, freezing her in place. It was Cameron, come to look for her. She knew it. She stared fixedly at the closed bedroom door, barely breathing, her stomach churning with tension. It wasn't Cameron, just one of the servants. She ought to go down and welcome Cameron home. He expected it of her. If she didn't go downstairs, he would come looking for her, and then he would be angry. But she couldn't go down to meet him, not yet. She'd go downstairs in a minute and greet him in the polite monotone he'd taught her. She would go down in a minute or two. Hardcastle sank into his favorite chair and looked around his warm, comfortable study. It had been a long day, and he wasn't as young as he used to be. He started to order Jillian to fetch him a drink, and then scowled as he realized she wasn't there. She ought to have been there. It was her place to be at his side, to carry out his wishes. He'd have to have another little talk with her later on. He got to his feet, ignoring his protesting back, and poured himself a large drink. He rather thought he'd earned it.
Come in.
Wolf and Roxanne came in. He dropped back into his chair, noting sourly that neither of them looked particularly tired. Roxanne leaned against the fireplace with her arms folded, waiting patiently for new orders.
No guest room for her tonight. You'd probably wake up in the early hours to find the whole damned hall in flames.
Wolf stood to attention before him, waiting to report on the day's activities. Let him wait. Do him good to be reminded of his place. Hardcastle sipped unhurriedly at his wine and nodded to the sorcerer to begin.
As expected, all the minor...
Most of the reports were pretty straightforward. All the minor candidates having dropped out simplified matters. Hardcastle wouldn't have to have them crushed or killed, after all. General Longarm was still making a nuisance of himself, but he was nothing more than a retired soldier. And with all the mercenaries currently battling on the streets, soldiers weren't particularly popular right now. Adamant still presented a problem. The Brotherhood of Steel declared in his favor and were actually out on the streets sticking their noses into things that didn't concern them. Hardcastle scowled. He'd better send word to the right people and have them called off.
Now we get to the heart of our mission for...
Wolf droned on, showing off as usual how professional he was, and Hardcastle waited impatiently. He had a question he wanted to ask, but he didn't interrupt. He didn't want the sorcerer to be able to hide behind the excuse of any other business.
Until we receive more information, that's the status of the campaign.
Wolf eventually ground to a halt, and Hardcastle looked at him steadily.
You said you had power now, Wolf. Real power. Power enough to break through Adamant's wards and destroy him and his new sorcerer. So why are they still alive?
Wolf met Hardcastle's gaze unflinchingly.
It will take time before I can use my power safely. For the moment, I'm still concentrating on the wards that hold the abomination safely within me. We were lucky to find him while he was still relatively weak after his awakening. If he was to escape now, he would be very angry with us. He'd destroy us, the Holy Haven, and probably most of the Low Kingdoms. We're talking about one of the transient beings, Cameron, not some low-level demon. We can't risk something like that getting loose.
So what am I supposed to do about Adamant?
Nothing for the moment. Let's wait and see how the polling goes. There's still plenty of time to intervene directly, if it should prove necessary.
That's not good enough, sorcerer.
Hardcastle looked across at Roxanne.
According to my sources, Longarm is planning an attack on Adamant tonight. I want you to use your inside contact to get into Adamant's house. Stay hidden and wait for the attack, and then take advantage of the confusion to make sure Adamant dies. You better kill your contact as well. Is that clear?
Of course. Sounds like fun.
Roxanne smiled at Hardcastle, and he had to look away. Few people could meet Roxanne's smile without flinching, even when she was on their side. The banquet at Adamant's mansion was a noisy affair. There were so many guests that even the main dining hall was barely sufficient to hold them all. The single great table had all but disappeared under huge servings of food and wines, and there wasn't a spare place left for anyone. The huge candelabra and dozens of wall lamps filled the hall with a blaze of light, and the guests filled the air with a roar of chatter. It was a victory celebration in every way that mattered. No one had any doubts as to the election's outcome. This night would be Reform's night. They could tell. They could feel it on the air and in the streets. Adamant sat in the seat of honor, of course, with Danielle on one side and Medley on the other. Danielle was busy feeding Adamant by hand with something covered in a sticky sauce, half of which seemed to be ending up on his face, to their mutual amusement. Medley busied himself sampling several wines to see which was the tastiest. The two warriors, Bearclaw and Kincaid, sat side by side discussing old battles and using the table cutlery to mark troop positions. The rest of the guests were Adamant's followers and party faithfuls, enjoying the rewards for their services to Adamant's campaign. Servants came and went, bringing yet more courses and side dishes. Adamant's food taster sat quietly to one side, nibbling at a light salad, having given up trying to keep up with everyone else. A dozen or so dogs wandered around the hall, enjoying all the noise and attention, and feeding on bones and scraps thrown to them by indulgent guests. Hawk and Fisher were there too, but they weren't part of the banquet. They were on duty. They'd get their dinner later in the kitchens, if they were lucky. Reform only went so far, after all. Hawk was fatalistic about such things, and if anything, preferred to have his attention free to watch for threats. But Fisher was simmering with barely repressed bile. Hawk kept a watchful eye on her. She tended to take such things personally. At the moment, she was scowling dubiously at a chicken leg she'd snatched from under the nose of a resentful hound. The animal was about to challenge her for it, but one glare from Fisher was enough to change his mind.
You're not really going to eat that, are you?
Damn right I am. I'm hungry.
She gnawed industriously at the leg for a while, and then gestured with it at the banquet table.
Look at them all, stuffing their faces. There's not one of them who's worked half as hard as we have today. Hope they all get gas.
Don't take it so hard. I'm sure Adamant would have invited us to the table if he could. But it would do his image no good at all, and he knows it. The cause is great for political reform, but it's got a long way to go before it can start meddling with the social structure.
I'd like to meddle with his structure, preferably using a large mallet.
It's not as if we've been singled out. Adamant's got a good 20 to 30 mercenaries and men-at-arms scattered around his house standing guard. And none of them were invited either.
We're different.
Maybe. Hey, where's Medley going?
Hawk and Fisher watched interestedly as Medley made his excuses to Adamant and left the table. He seemed to be in something of a hurry, and by the time he got to the main door, he was practically running.
The fish must be bad.
Fisher looked at him fondly.
You have no romance in your soul, Hawk. Now that he's no longer needed here, he's probably off to see his mysterious girlfriend. I wonder if we'll get to meet her.
I doubt it. Hey, now Danielle's leaving as well.
Hawk and Fisher watched again as Danielle made her excuses to Adamant and left the table.
Maybe the fish is bad.
I don't know. She's been up and down all day. Maybe her illness is catching up with her.
Or she's gone after Medley to try and sneak a look at his girlfriend.
Either that or someone slipped poison in their food.
They looked at each other.
No, they haven't eaten anything the others haven't. And anyway, Mortis is keeping a close watch on the banquet.
No doubt we'll find out what's happening eventually. We usually do.
That was before we got involved in politics.
True.
They watched everyone else eating for a while. Hawk's stomach rumbled.
Something's wrong.
How do you mean?
We're supposed to get regular security updates from Adamant's people, but no one's been by here in almost half an hour.
That's right. You wander over and take up a position by Adamant. I'll take a quick look out the door and see if anyone's around. It's always possible Adamant's people are just getting slack now that the worst is over, but...
Yeah, but...
She headed casually in Adamant's direction, while Hawk made unhurriedly for the main door. No point in upsetting the guests if they didn't have to. The banquet hall was set right in the center of the mansion and had just the two doors. The far door led straight to the kitchens, a servant's route. Hawk checked it earlier. It was too narrow and twisting to move an attack force through. The main door led out onto a wide corridor that ran pretty much the length of the house, with only a couple of bends. Hawk scowled. He didn't like the direction his thoughts were taking.
Any attack force would have to get past all of Adamant's men and Mortis's protective wards. I would have heard something, unless the attack force was very, very good.
Hawk stood before the main door and listened. He couldn't hear a thing over the racket the dinner guests were making. Why the hell did Medley and Danielle choose this particular time to disappear? He reached out a hand to the doorknob and then stopped as the doorknob began to turn slowly on its own. He backed away. The door flew open and a dozen cloaked and masked men burst in.
Isabel, look out!
Hawk drew his axe. The guests at table screamed and yelled and struggled to get to their feet. Fisher moved to stand between Adamant and his attackers, sword at the ready. Bearclaw and Kincaid rose to their feet and looked around for weapons. Neither of them had worn swords to table. That would have been an insult to Adamant. Verkaw seized a heavy silver candlestick and hefted it professionally. Kincaid broke a bottle against the wall with practiced ease. The attackers came spilling around Hawk like rushing water past a rock. He stood his ground and cut down two men with his axe. Verkaw came charging forward, deftly avoided a vicious sword stroke, and clubbed the man to the ground. He quickly stepped over the fallen body to tackle another intruder, and Kincaid came forward to guard his back with the broken bottle. Two swordsmen thought he'd be an easy target. Kincaid smiled easily, cut one man's throat, and blinded the other, his hand moving too quickly to be seen. Kincaid threw aside the bottle and snatched up a dead man's sword. Blood flew on the air as he moved swiftly among the scattering enemy, sword darting back and forth in textbook cuts and parries. Three men got past Hawk and the two warriors and made straight for Adamant. Fisher met them with her sword. The first man went down almost immediately, clutching at the wide rip in his gut. The second forced Fisher back step by step with a whirlwind attack of cuts and thrusts. The third man closed in on Adamant. Fisher tried desperately to finish her man so that she could get back to protect Adamant, but her opponent was too good to be that easily dismissed. Fisher cut and parried, and then faked a stumble. The masked man thought he saw his chance and moved in, and Fisher ran him through. She jerked her sword free and turned quickly around just in time to see Adamant throw a bowl of soup into the third man's face, blinding him. The intruder clawed at his eyes, and Adamant kicked him in the groin. The man sank to his knees. Adamant took away his sword and looked around for another victim. Hawk cut down two more men, the wide head of his axe punching through hidden chainmail as though it wasn't there. Bearclaw bound up a nasty-looking gash in his shoulder with a dubious-looking handkerchief taken from his sleeve.
I must be getting old, Joshua. It was a time they'd never have got near me.
Well, it must be said the candlestick never was your preferred weapon. Grab one of their swords and we'll go and see if there are any more of these bastards in the house.
Adamant moved quickly forward to address his guests.
It's all right, my friends. The worst is over. Please stay where you are while I have my people search the house and make it secure.
He moved quickly over to Bearclaw and Kincaid.
Joshua, Lawrence, find out what's happened to my men-at-arms and report back here when the house is fully secure again. And remember, Danny and Stefan went off on their own just before the attack. Make sure they're all right.
The two warriors nodded silently and left the hall, swords in hand. Hawk wanted to go with them, but knew he couldn't. His priority had to be Adamant's safety. He went over to Fisher and made sure she was all right. They looked around at the mayhem they'd helped to cause and shared a grin. Adamant approached them and nodded his thanks.
It may not look like it, but this is still something of a disaster. A whole lot of nasty questions come to mind, starting with how the hell they got in. Mortis's wards are supposed to keep out anyone I haven't personally vouched for. And why the hell didn't Medley's intelligence people warn him there was a raid in the offing?
No problem. We handled it. Any idea who they were?
Not really. Last chance assault by Hardcastle's people, presumably. Let's take a look.
They moved quickly among the bodies, pulling off masks and studying faces. Hawk and Fisher didn't recognize anyone, but Adamant remained kneeling beside the body of a gray-haired man with a harsh, scarred face that hadn't relaxed at all in death. Hawk and Fisher moved over to join him.
General Longarm himself. He always did take his politics too personally.
Let's keep looking. Maybe we'll get really lucky and find Hardcastles here as well.
Adamant smiled in spite of himself and then looked around quickly as the main door opened and Kincaid came in. He walked straight over to Adamant, who rose to his feet.
We have something of a problem, James. Not with the house, that's secure. It seems there were 50 of the intruders originally. Your people took care of the others before they got this far. No one heard anything because of the noise of the banquet. We've got quite a few casualties, and even more dead. These people were professionals.
Militant Brothers of Steel.
Kincaid nodded, but didn't look all that impressed.
Well, they're dead militants now.
So, what's the problem?
I think you'd better come see for yourself, James.
Kincaid couldn't seem to meet Adamant's eyes.
It's Danielle.
Adamant's face lost all its color as though someone had just punched him in the gut.
What happened? Is she hurt?
I really think you'd best see for yourself, James.
He's not going anywhere without us.
Adamant nodded impatiently.
Let's go, then.
Kincaid led the way out into the main corridor. There were bodies and blood everywhere. Preoccupied as he was, Adamant still had room in him to be sickened at the sight of so many men who died in his behalf. He stepped carefully over the bodies, nodding here and there at a familiar face, and then Adamant stopped and knelt by one man. It was the butler, Villiers. He took a dozen wounds before he died with a broken sword clutched in his hand.
He never believed in reform. But he stayed with me anyway because I was family. He never left us, even during the bad days. He protected me as a child, and all it got him was a bad death in a house where he should have been safe.
Adamant got to his feet and nodded for Kincaid to carry on. They walked down the corridor.
You haven't said anything about Stefan. Is he all right?
Oh, he's fine. Locked himself in your study with his girlfriend. I don't think he knows anything's happened. Just shouted at me to go away when I knocked on the door.
Adamant nodded, not really listening, and Kincaid led the way up the stairs to the next floor. His face was fixed and drawn.
She must be dead. If anything else, he would have said.
They moved along the hallway to Adamant's bedroom. Bearclaw was waiting outside the door. There was pity in his face as he looked at Adamant. Pity, but something else Hawk couldn't read. Bearclaw opened the bedroom door, and everyone drew back a few steps to let Adamant go in first. In the bedroom, Danielle was sitting on the bed. Her face was flushed, and she wouldn't look Adamant in the eye. Kincaid picked up a small silver snuff box from the dressing table and handed it to Adamant. He looked at it blankly for a moment and then opened it. Inside was a small amount of gray-white powder. Adamant looked at Bearclaw.
Cocaine. We found her helping herself when we were searching this floor.
Oh, that's going to look really good when it gets out.
It's not going to get out. Not until after the election.
Adamant looked at Danielle, and his mouth tightened.
How could you, Danny? How could you do this to me?
Oh, that's typical, James. Never mind why I'm taking drugs. All you care about is your precious reputation.
Danielle glared at him sullenly, her voice shrill and bitter.
I've been sniffing dust ever since you started campaigning for the steps. The best part of 3 months, and it's taken you till now to notice. It's all your fault, anyway. You never had time for me anymore. All you talked and thought and dreamed about was your bloody campaign. I tried to go along, to be a part of it for your sake, but you never even noticed I was there. We aren't all as strong as you, James. You've been full of energy right from the beginning, inspired by your cause, running full tilt from one thing to the next, with the rest of us straggling along behind you, trying to keep up. I just couldn't anymore. I was tired all the time and lonely and depressed. So I started sniffing dust now and again, just to give me a boost, to make me feel human and keep me going. Only the campaign just ground on, and I got more and more tired, and there were always more and more things that needed doing for your bloody cause, and I needed more and more dust just to feel normal and get me through the day. I even had to embezzle from you to pay for the dust.
Why didn't you tell me?
He realized he was still holding the snuff box and put it down on the dressing table. He wiped his fingers unconsciously on his sleeve as though they were dirty.
When did I ever get a chance to talk to you? We haven't had a moment to ourselves in months.
Adamant started to say something heated in reply and then stopped himself and marshaled his control.
Perhaps you're right, Danny. I don't know. We'll talk about it later. In the meantime, I have to think about how best to keep this quiet. A lot of people are counting on me to swing this election, and I won't let them down. If news of this gets out, I'll be ruined. I've made a lot of enemies in my stand against the drug trade, and they'd use a scandal like this to destroy me. Who else knows, apart from us? Who was your supplier?
Danielle smiled almost triumphantly.
Lucian Sykes.
What?
Drugs come in through the docks, and he takes his share. Where do you suppose all the money came from that he's been donating to your campaign?
Adamant turned away and closed his eyes for a moment. Nobody said anything. Adamant turned to Hawk and Fisher.
How much of this do you need to report?
Not all of it. Keeping quiet about your wife comes under the general heading of protecting you. But Sykes is a different matter. We can't ignore someone in his position. But he can wait until after the election tonight.
Thank you. That's all I can ask. Danny, pull yourself together, and then come down and help with my guests. People have been hurt.
Do I get to keep my dust?
Do you need it?
Yes.
Then keep it.
Adamant turned and left the room, and the others followed him out.
I'm going to have to put out some kind of statement about the attack to reassure my followers that I'm all right. Rumors spread like wildfire in Haven, particularly when it's bad news. I'd better talk to Stefan. He's probably still in my study with his lady friend. I did promise no one would barge in on them while they were there, but I'm sure he won't mind, under the circumstances.
The group came to a stop at the door of Adamant's study.
Stefan? It's James. I need to see you. Something's come up.
He waited a moment, but there was no reply. Adamant smiled slightly, produced a key, and unlocked the door. Adamant pushed the door open. Medley and Roxanne were sitting together. For a moment, nobody moved as the two sides stared at each other. And then Roxanne grabbed her sword belt and drew her sword.
Get out of here, Stefan! They'll kill us both!
She started toward Adamant, sword at the ready, and then stopped as Hawk and Fisher quickly moved forward to protect him.
Oh my, no!
Medley got to his feet, but stood where he was, staring at Adamant's horrified face. Roxanne grabbed a burning brand from the fire and set it to a hanging tapestry. Flames ran up the wall. She grabbed Medley's arm and urged him toward the other door. Hawk and Fisher went after them as Bearclaw and Kincaid tried to beat out the fire before it could spread. Adamant just stood where he was, watching. Roxanne backed away from Hawk and Fisher one step at a time, her sword sweeping back and forth before her, keeping the guards at bay. She wore a broad grin, and her eyes spoke death. She glanced back over her shoulder just long enough to be sure that Medley was safely through the door. Then, after a moment's hesitation, she turned and ran after him. Hawk and Fisher plunged after her, but she slammed the door in their faces and turned the key on the other side. Hawk lifted his axe to break down the door and then lowered it again. His job was to protect Adamant, not to chase after traitors. Medley and Roxanne would keep for another day. Hawk put away his axe, and after a moment, Fisher sheathed her sword. Kincaid and Bearclaw tore down the burning tapestry and were stamping out the flames. Adamant was still standing in the doorway, staring at nothing. Hawk glanced at Fisher, who shrugged uncertainly. He moved tentatively toward Adamant, and the politician's eyes came back into focus. He had to swallow two or three times before he could speak.
My wife is taking drugs supplied by one of my main backers. My guests have been attacked in my own dining hall. Most of my men-at-arms are dead, and now it turns out my closest friend has been a traitor all along. I never knew politics could cost so much.
For a moment, he couldn't get his breath, and Hawk thought Adamant might cry. But the moment passed, and some of his strength came back to him. His face hardened.
Not a word of this to anyone. We can't afford for my supporters to know how badly we've been betrayed. It will all come out after the election, but by then it won't matter, whatever the result. So, we'll go back to the dining hall, reassure my guests, and keep our mouths shut about all of this. But win or lose, Stefan Medley is a dead man.
Medley followed Roxanne through the packed streets, dazed and unquestioning. It was all like some horrible nightmare he couldn't wake up from. One minute he'd been cherishing a snatched moment with Roxanne, and the next he was running for his life. Medley didn't know where he was running to. Roxanne took over as soon as they left the house. He couldn't seem to concentrate on anything. All he could see was Adamant's face and the look of betrayal in his eyes. Roxanne led him through increasingly narrow and squalid streets until finally they came to the Sheep's Head Inn, a quiet backwater tavern they'd used before for their few assignations. The bartender showed no interest in seeing them again, but then he never did. That was one of the reasons why they chose the place. Roxanne collected the key and led the way up the back stairs to their usual room, and for the first time they were able to sit down and look at each other.
All in all, it's been an interesting day. Pity I didn't have time to kill Hawk and Fisher. But there'll be other times.
Is that all you've got to say? My life is ruined. My reputation isn't worth spit anymore. And all you can think about is fighting a couple of guards. We've got to get out of Haven, Roxanne. James won't move against us while the election's still running. But once that's over, he'll send every man he's got after us. His pride won't let him do anything else. And you can bet he won't have given them orders to bring us back alive.
We can go to Hardcastle. He'll protect us. If only to spite Adamant.
No, not Hardcastle. I've hurt him too badly in the past. He has scores to settle with me. Look, Roxanne, this is our chance to get away from all this and start over.
But I don't want to leave. I don't run from anyone. Besides, I like working for Hardcastle. The pay's good. And the work is interesting. I'm staying.
Medley looked at her for a long moment.
Why are you doing this to me, Roxanne?
Doing what?
I love you, Roxanne, but I can't go to Hardcastle. If you love me, you won't ask me to.
Roxanne looked down at the floor, and then back at him again.
Sorry, Stefan, but I told you. I work for Hardcastle. You were just another job. Hardcastle Sorcerer set me on you as a way of getting to Adamant. You told me all kinds of useful things without even realizing it. You were fun, but now the masks are off and the game's over. You lost. I'm sorry to rush you, Stefan, but I have to be going now.
She got to her feet and Medley stood up to face her.
So it was all nothing but lies. All the things you said to me. I betrayed my best friend and dragged my honor through the mud, all for you, and now you're telling me it was all for nothing? I can't believe that, Roxanne. I won't believe that.
Don't take it so personally. It's just business. No hard feelings.
Medley dropped down again as though all the strength had gone out of his legs.
No. No hard feelings, Roxanne.
She smiled at him briefly and left. Medley stared at the closed door, listening to the sound of her footsteps disappearing down the stairs. All the clocks in Haven struck 8 in the evening, and the polls finally opened. Brightly colored election booths appeared on the designated street corners in the time it took for the bells to toll the hour. Magically created and maintained by the Council's Circle of Sorcerers, they were as near to being corruption-proof as anything in Haven could be. Once a vote had been registered and placed in the metal box, nothing but the most powerful sorceries could get at it again. There were fingerprint checks to make sure everyone was who they claimed to be, and to keep out simulacra and homunculi. Haven's voters were a devious lot when it came to corruption and cheating. The inns and the brothels were still going strong, though the free booze had run out long ago. Some of the day-long revelers were busy sleeping it off on tavern floors and tables, uncaring that they were missing the very chance to vote that they'd been celebrating. Bets were still being made, at widely varying odds, and rumor and speculation ran rife. People thronged the streets, dressed in their best. An election was an occasion, a chance to see and be seen. Pickpockets and cutpurses prospered. Jugglers, conjurers, stilt walkers, and of course any number of street preachers made the most of the occasion, always on the lookout for a crowd and anyone who looked like they might stand still long enough to get preached at, while Haven made its choice. Roxanne leaned back in her chair and stretched her legs languorously as Hardcastle poured her a glass of his best wine. He was smiling broadly and positively radiating good cheer. It didn't suit him. Wolf and Jillian stood quietly in the background.
You've done well, Roxanne.
Hardcastle poured himself a large drink.
Without Medley to help him, Adamant's organization will fall apart at the seams, and he'll lose every advantage he's gained. All it needs now is a few more pushes in the right places, and everything he's built will collapse around him. It's a pity you didn't...
Roxanne shrugged noncommittally and sipped at her wine. She'd taken advantage of Hardcastle's reverie to study Jillian Hardcastle and the Sorcerer Wolf. Both of them looked rather the worse for wear. Jillian showed a bruised and swollen mouth and was holding herself awkwardly as though favoring a hidden pain. Wolf looked tired and drawn. There were dark bruises of fatigue under his eyes, and his gaze was more than a little wild. He seemed preoccupied, as though listening to a voice only he could hear. Roxanne realized Hardcastle had stopped talking and quickly turned her attention back to him.
All right. What do we do now?
We need to isolate Adamant even further. We've taken away his advisor. Who does that leave him to lean on? The two guards, Hawk and Fisher. They've been acting all along like Adamant's paid men, for all their vaunted impartiality. With them out of the way, Adamant should crumble and fall apart nicely.
I can take either of them on their own, but killing both of them would be tricky. Fun, though.
I don't want them killed, I want them kidnapped. They have interfered in my life far too often, and they're going to pay the price. They'll beg for death before I'm finished with them.
I can't guarantee to take both of them alive. One, perhaps, but not both.
I thought you might say that. So I've arranged some help for you.
He tugged at the bell pull by his desk. There was a short, uncomfortable pause, and then the study door opened, and Pike and De Silva came in. Roxanne studied them warily from her chair. Pike was tall and muscular in his mid-20s, with a clear open face and a nasty smile. He moved well and carried his chainmail as though it were weightless. He was a familiar type, Throw a stick in a gladiator's training school and you'd hit a dozen just like him. Da Silva stood short and stocky with a broad chest and a wrestler's overdeveloped arm muscles. He was a few years older than Pike and looked it. His face was heavy and bony and would have looked brutish even without the perpetual scowl that tugged at his features. As well as a sword, he carried a 4-foot-long headbreaker of solid oak weighted with lead at both ends. Independently, they were proficient enough mercenaries, but working together as a team, they'd built a reputation for death and mayhem that almost rivaled Roxanne's. She glared at them both, and then switched her glare to Hardcastle.
Why do you need them? You've got me.
I want Hawk and Fisher taken alive. The only way to do that without major casualties to my side is to make sure we have the advantage of overwhelming odds. Pike and Da Silva command a troop of 50 mercenaries. You will lead them against Adamant's people. Wolf will supply magical protection. Is that clear?
You're the boss, Hardcastle. What do we do after we've taken Hawk and Fisher?
I've set aside a place for them. Pike and Da Silva have the details. Adamant and his people should be hitting the streets in about half an hour. Follow them, pick your spot, and do the job. No excuses on this one. I want them alive. I have plans for Hawk and Fisher.
James Adamant led his people out into the high steps, determined to make as many speeches as he could while the polls were still open. None of his people said anything, but it was clear to everyone that Adamant needed to reassure himself of his popularity after so many things had gone wrong. So with tired limbs and weary hearts, they followed him through the streets one last time. Adamant strode ahead, out in front for all to see, with Danielle at his side. Hawk and Fisher followed close behind. Adamant's supporters had dispersed and gone home after the debacle of the victory banquet, so only half a dozen mercenaries accompanied Adamant on this last excursion into the steps, with Bearclaw and Kincaid bringing up the rear. It was a far cry from the cheerful, confident host that followed him on his first outing, but that was before the evening's tragic events.
We can prevail! We will prevail!
Adamant hurried from street to street at a pace his retinue was hard-pressed to match, as though he was trying to leave his most recent memories behind and be again the confident, unworried politician he had been at the start of the day. Hawk and Fisher stretched their legs and kept up with him. They walked with weapons drawn, just in case Hardcastle tried for a last-minute assassination. Hawk kept a careful watch on Danielle. He'd wanted to leave her behind, but she'd insisted on going with them. Trouble was, she was right. Her presence was a vote winner, and her absence would have raised questions Adamant couldn't afford to answer. She threw the last of her dust on the fire before she left. Adamant just nodded stiffly and turned away. They were walking arm in arm and smiling at the crowds, but they hadn't exchanged 5 words since they left the house. Hawk sighed quietly to himself, as if he didn't have enough things to worry about. Medley had disappeared, along with the notorious Roxanne, but it was too early to tell just how much information he'd betrayed to Hardcastle. Worst of all was the damage he'd done to Adamant's confidence. Adamant trusted Stefan Medley implicitly. He allowed Medley to shape and plan his whole campaign. Now Medley was gone, and Adamant didn't know who or what he could rely on anymore. On top of all that, he found he couldn't rely on Mortis anymore, either. Longarm and his men shouldn't have been able to break into his house at all, but the dead man's mind had been wandering again, and his ward slipped. Mortis promised it wouldn't happen again, and Adamant pretended to believe him, but neither of them was fooled.
This cause must truly be our cause!
Adamant made another speech on yet another street corner, and as always a crowd gathered to listen. Even now, after all that had happened, Adamant could still sway a crowd with his voice. Perhaps because he still believed in his cause, even if he was no longer sure of himself. The speech started off well enough. The crowd was responsive and enthusiastic, and cheered in all the right places. Bearclaw and Kincaid moved unobtrusively among them, making sure no one got out of hand. Hawk and Fisher leaned wearily against a wall, feeling unneeded. 50 mercenaries came pouring out of a side street with swords in their hands. They cut their way through the scattering crowd, uncaring who they hurt. Bearclaw and Kincaid drew their swords and fought side by side as the tide of mercenaries hit them. Guarding Adamant and Danielle, Hawk and Fisher fought side by side, and the mercenaries fell before them, unable to match their skill or their fury. Bearclaw and Kincaid fought alone, separated by the mercenaries, bleeding from a dozen wounds but refusing to fall. Dead men lay piled about them. Then Roxanne appeared out of nowhere. Her sword flashed out to slice through the meat of Kincaid's leg. His mouth gaped soundlessly as his leg crumpled beneath him, unable to bear his weight. He fell to one knee, still trying to swing his sword. Roxanne swept past him, grinning fiercely, heading for Hawk and Fisher. Pike and Da Silva came after her. Pike's sword lashed out to deflect a blow from Bearclaw, and Da Silva's heavy wooden staff swept across to slam into Bearclaw's side. Ribs broke under the impact. Bearclaw coughed blood and fell forward onto his hands and knees. The mercenaries closed in around Bearclaw and Kincaid, and their swords rose and fell in steady butchery. Roxanne burst through the milling crowd of fighters and threw herself at Fisher. Fisher tried to hold her ground and couldn't, forced back by the sudden strength and speed of the attack. Hawk tried to reach her, but Pike and Da Silva were quickly upon him, Pike engaging his axe while Da Silva circled patiently with his headbreaker, trying for a clear shot. Roxanne thrust and parried, and step by step, Fisher was driven back until her back was pressed up against a wall and there was nowhere else to go. Fisher was good with a sword, but Roxanne was an expert, inhumanly strong, and she never seemed to get tired. As Fisher fell under Da Silva's headbreaker and Roxanne's relentless attack, one of the mercenaries beat aside Adamant's sword and lunged forward. Danielle threw herself in the blade's way. The blade plunged into her side. She grabbed the blade with both hands as she crumpled to the ground. Adamant ran the mercenary through. Two men stepped forward to take his place, their faces grim and determined. Adamant lifted his head to the dark sky.
Oh, damn you, Mortis! You promised you'd protect her! Help us!
The mercenaries froze in their attack and looked briefly startled, then vomited blood explosively. They fell to the ground, kicking and shaking helplessly as blood poured from their mouths. Adamant looked around dazedly as one by one the attacking mercenaries dropped, coughing up their life's blood in harsh, painful spasms. In moments, Hawk and Adamant were the only ones left standing, surrounded by the dead and the dying.
My lord.
Adamant turned his back on them and knelt beside Danielle, lying at his feet, curled around the bloody wound in her side. He took her hand and she clutched it tightly. Her face was covered with sweat.
Screwed up again, didn't I?
Be quiet. We've got to get you to a doctor.
A bit late for that, James. I'm sorry.
What for?
Everything.
You've nothing to be sorry for, Danny. Nothing at all. Now, shut up and save your strength.
Danielle clutched at her side. Adamant's heart missed a beat before he realized she was smiling in amazement.
My side? It doesn't hurt anymore. What's happening, James?
Just doing my job. The wound is healed. But you two had better get back to the house as fast as you can. You're right on the edge of my limits. I don't know how much longer I can protect you.
Mortis's voice faded from their minds and was gone. Adamant helped Danielle to her feet and looked around him. Hawk was checking quickly through the bodies.
Where's Bearclaw and Kincaid?
Dead.
And Captain Fisher?
Taken. Roxanne and her two friends must have had their own magical protection.
I'm sorry. So many dead, and all because of me.
Hawk turned and glared at him.
Stop talking nonsense. There's only one man responsible for all this, and that's Hardcastle. And Isabel isn't dead. She was alive when they took her. Now I'm going to get her back. Can you and Danielle get home safely without me?
I think so. Mortis is back looking after us.
Right. Go home and stay there. Wait for the results to come in. I'm going to find Isabel, and then I'm going to pay Hardcastle a visit. This has gone beyond politics now. Hardcastle made it personal.